Hello, flight instructors and NAFI members. John Niehaus, Director of Program Development for the National Association of Flight Instructors, welcoming you back to another episode of the NAFI More Right Rider Podcast, the podcast for flight instructors on the go. And today, I'm excited, as always, to announce that this episode is sponsored, and once again, sponsored by Avemco Insurance Company. Now, we've talked the last few episodes about Avemco and the insurance plan that they offer to NAFI members. In my opinion, in NAFI's opinion, in Avemco's opinion, and hopefully any NAFI member that has its opinion, it's the best one on the market. You know, it really does protect NAFI members to the extent that you would expect a insurance plan to offer. You know, it really goes above and beyond in what it protects, and it has a lot of different coverage styles. You can kind of pick what you want. It even includes, or can include, an optional hull coverage. And so for you instructors who are just getting into the game and you don't think that you have anything to protect, trust me, you do. Take a look at it. It's worth your attention. So if you are interested and you want more information on the Avemco insurance plan for NAFI members, just go to www.nafinet.org/insurance. Get all the information you need there. Or you can even go to Avemco's website and look for the NAFI insurance plan there. And of course, Avemco has been longtime friends of NAFI, longtime supporters, and we thank them for their constant desire to help and constant support. So we couldn't do a lot of the things that we do as an organization without them. Now, the next point of business, and I feel like we've got a few things to talk about here. Don't forget that NAFI members, well, not NAFI members, but if you are listening to this podcast, NAFI member or not, you can get a $10 discount if you use the discount code POD49, Papa Oscar Delta 49. And instead of $59, you'll get it for $49. And that includes all of the things, including the availability for the Avemco insurance plan. So I encourage you to check that out at nafinet.org. The other thing I wanted to briefly mention, and I'm sure that you will hear more about this as the coming weeks go by, but I have officially made the world public to the idea that I will be leaving NAFI. I've been with NAFI for almost 14 years. It'll be 14 years in September, I think, and it's been a great road. It's been a long road. I have become the person I am today because of NAFI, the instructor that I am today. And I'd like to think that I've also helped contribute to a lot of the positive things that have happened within NAFI. We've done it as a team, so it's not just me. It's our board, it's our staff. And you know, it's just one of those things where for me to find the success I want in other places, something had to give, and I'll be sad to leave NAFI, but I think it'll be an interesting chapter for the organization, and I think that sometimes new ideas and new blood coming in is a good thing. You know, I will always support NAFI and appreciate them for what they've done for me, and you know, hopefully it's been reciprocal. Hopefully for all of you NAFI members out there that I have talked with on the phone, via email, worked on a podcast, a video, helped you with your master application, or anything in between, Medit Air Venture, I have appreciated each and every one of you, and you all have brought something into my life for what I've done and made me better. So it's been a wonderful road, and what it looks like moving forward for NAFI, I'm not quite sure. I will be working directly with the board of directors to make sure that that things run smoothly in my absence, and rest assured, the goal is to keep this podcast going, and so whether that continues with me for a while or whether we make a transition to somebody else, it'll maintain the same quality that you're used to. Or at least I hope so, and we'll see what happens moving forward. So please don't stop listening. We need you to keep listening, and hopefully you're enjoying it. And Finally, one of the things that I have loved about this podcast is helping members tell their stories. And I am, just through pure coincidence, am starting to correlate instruction from different careers. Some of you may know where this is going if I've already talked to you. But I'm really interested in seeing how educators of different things can share how they do it and mutually become better. And so the first episode that we did last year was talking to a sailboat instructor and how the sailing can translate into flight instruction, and I hope to do that moving forward. So, call to action here. If you are a instructor of something, whether it is an educational instructor, you know, K-12, collegiate instructor, music instructor, dance instructor, woodworking instructor, whatever that might be, figure skating, I don't know. I want to talk to you because I want to see what kind of ideas you have and how you do what you do. And maybe there's a way to apply some of these cool things to what we do. So, now, last thing, today's episode, it's another Mentor Live episode, and it is one that ran last year in January, and it is eliminating a mindset of apathy, and this was done by Jason Archer, a really prolific instructor, great guy, super knowledgeable, and I think he did a wonderful job in this presentation. And I won't go into the ins and outs of what it's about. I think you can guess, but I think it's a very valuable subject. And one of the things I haven't seen a lot of in this podcast is a lot of sort of episodic feedback. You know, if you're listening to this and you have ideas to contribute or thoughts, statements, anything, you can comment on the podcast. You can also send us an email, naffy@naffynet.org. And you can also go to social media and tell us what you think. I think that part of what we do, or the reasons why we do what we do, is to generate conversation, and I think conversation makes us all better. So I apologize for the very lengthy intro, but I just wanted everyone to know that that things will continue, and we appreciate you listening. So without further ado, eliminating a mindset of apathy, and this episode is once again sponsored by Avemco. Thanks.
Little bit about Jason. Jason Archer. I've really enjoyed getting to know Jason as we put this presentation together. I feel like he and I are kind of kindred spirits as far as how we look at flight instruction. But Jason has been a CFI for several years. He's the chief instructor of a flight school in Barrington, Massachusetts. And Jason has a bachelor's degree in astronomy from UMass Amherst. I gotta say, Jason, you're probably the first person I've ever met with a degree in astronomy. So tell us just real briefly, what got you into that?
I've always been into science fiction and things that are not of this planet and of this world. So I ended up going to college and studying engineering and took a class in a planetarium and absolutely fell in love with the planetarium and being able to manipulate the universe. So from there, it just kind of spiraled out of control. And I got my degree in astronomy, and now I spend part of my time playing around in a planetarium all day long with my head in the virtual stars, if you will.
Awesome. Well, like the bio there says, you leverage that degree into quite a career as a museum educator, which to me is part of what makes you such a great presenter on this topic, because you're not only a flight instructor, you are a career educator. And Jason is also currently a coordinator of planetarium operations for a school, and also holds the CFII, CFI, MEI, AGI, IGI, and is a commercial glider pilot, which is on my bucket list too. So Jason, we're so glad to have you. Without further ado, I'm going to kick it over to Jason Archer, and we're going to talk about eliminating this mindset of apathy that we think is plaguing us in our profession. Jason, you have the flight controls.
And I have the flight controls. Thank you, Aaron, very much. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for this opportunity. This has been a subject that, as Aaron said, we've been talking about quite a bit lately, and I hope we've got a good presentation for you here. So my goal for tonight is to really get us thinking and talking about and continue the conversation that I'm sure many of you have already had about flight instruction and what it really means and whatnot. I don't pretend to have any of the answers here for you, but I hope to offer some tools, kind of be inspirational, and really get the conversation started about what we're seeing in flight instruction now, the quality of the students that we're getting, the kind of training we're giving, and hopefully give some tips and tricks that you guys can take away to improve what we do and how we do it. I'm going to avoid some of the bigger stuff like fuel and maintenance costs and all that stuff, FAA regs, because that's stuff out of our control. But really, in my mind, what's in our control is the culture in which we operate, how we interact with our students, how we interact with each other. And that's kind of how I'm going to present what I'm going to present here, too. And certainly a lot of the stuff I'm going to talk about, I, too, have been guilty of. So I'm going to put myself right out there that I am not perfect, nor do I have all the answers. And again, I'm really hoping this is just a conversation starter for all of us with regards to how we can improve flight instruction today, tomorrow, and going forward, kind of a catalyst, if you will. So kind of in short, what we're going to talk about here is I'm going to briefly kind of review what I've seen, what others are seeing in the industry. We should probably ask ourselves if we think what is happening today within the flight training community is okay. And I think we kind of all know the answer to that. If you're on this webinar, you probably have an inkling that things are not as we would like them to be. So I've got experience being a CFI for the past 8 years or so, and throughout my presentation, I'm going to share some of my experiences with you, and I'd love to hear what you guys have gone through, what you're hearing, and what you're seeing out there in the industry and working with your students and whatnot. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't introduce some basic teaching theory. We got to go back to that, right, and get ourselves refreshed, and some of it's pretty exciting. So we're going to talk, yes, about the much-beloved Aviation Instructor's Handbook, which I'm a great fan of. It is a really great resource. And I'm also going to present some other material and ideas that I hope will get us thinking about how we think, how we learn, and how we process and share information within ourselves and with our students. So again, I hope this presentation is kind of a catalyst for us for more discussion and exchange of ideas think about how we approach what we do. So just to review real quickly, what are the current trends that we see going on? And last week's Mentor Live presentation, I hope you were on for it. I certainly was. And they did a great job of presenting kind of what we see is going on in the industry right now. And it detailed and outlined much of what we think is going on, and as well as some possible solutions. So some of what I'm present here is based on my own experience and as well as the data. So we know that the first time pass rates for private single engine land applicants is pretty low. And I've heard it's anywhere from a 30% on up to 60% or more of initial failures. Okay. Conversations I've had with fellow DPEs and whatnot, I've also heard the failure rates for first time CFI and double I initials is quite high, higher than they've been seeing and whatnot. So this is kind of anecdotal, but I've been hearing it quite a bit. And I think the data supports that too. Right. The quality, and not only is the failure rate kind of high, they're also saying the quality of the applicants they're getting is not where they'd like them to be. And it's kind of raised a red flag with them. So there was a great line from last month's presentation. It seems like the current trend in training is to train to meet experience requirements and hope they pass the test by meeting the quality standards. And I kind of want to repeat that because I'm experiencing that. I'm seeing that from my applicants or whatnot, that kind of mindset and whatnot. And I'm sure you guys are too as well. So we also know we've got a high turnover rate of CFIs. They don't really get enough experience to really get good at their jobs if they really do want to get good at their jobs. And so even if they stay in the industry long enough, are they actively trying? Are they consciously trying to become better instructors and whatnot? If a student fails, what are the consequences for a CFI? Think about that. Mostly there's really no consequences, right? I've had a few cases where one case where I was called in to work with a student who failed his check ride six times. And my first question was, well, how many CFIs has he had? He had one, a single CFI, signed him off six times, and he failed six times. And the consequence in that case was some FA involvement, some fast team intervention and whatnot. But it really shouldn't get to this point, should it? And that, of course, that's just kind of a localized case and whatnot. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about here. And two, it's interesting, as soon as this talk was kind of promoted and whatnot, I've actually received quite a few emails from colleagues across the country. So there's actually more to this story. And so here we go. So I do want to kind of put out a little bit of a disclaimer here that I think is important. When Aaron and I were putting this talk together and talking about the concept of this and the idea of this, one thing that came to mind is first thing we don't want to do is we're not here to attack or single out, right, any instructor out there. We're not saying instructors are bad, and I'm not saying that at all, okay? And I'm not saying the industry too, where we're not saying the industry of flight instruction is completely broken by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of great instruction that's happening out there. And I personally work with some amazing and super very caring and attentive CFIs. But there is, I think, there is a big collective of problems out there. And I think we all know this. So my goal here is to inject some positivity, provide some suggestions and solutions and whatnot, and inspire us perhaps to take a fresh look at how we teach aviation, and how we learn and how our students learn. So again, I've said it before, this is meant to be kind of the discussion starter, a way of self-reflection. So to kind of start it off here, a quick little video. Just okay is not okay. And perhaps some of you have seen this video too. And the question would be, what do you call a medical student who graduated at the bottom of his class?
Have you ever worked with Dr. Francis?
Oh yeah, he's okay.
Here we go.
Just okay?
Guess who just got reinstated? Well, not officially. Nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out.
I'll see you in there.
Just okay is not okay.
It's a pretty cool commercial. ATT has got a few of them like that. So this commercial kind of says it all, doesn't it? And so in my opinion, we have this disconnect in what professionalism means in aviation and in flight instruction. And how can this be? How can this be in such a highly safety demanding profession where we as pilots manage risk for basically the entirety of our jobs? So, and we all know that flying is inherently risky, and being complacent about this, how we teach it and how the and our standards we have about it should be exceedingly high, in my opinion. So is okay just okay? Oh, just okay is not okay. And again, the CFIs, we're the kind of the foundation, we're the goalkeepers here. So let's talk a little bit about apathy, and we can define what apathy is and kind of what we mean in our context of what we're talking about here. Apathy is when you lack motivation to do anything or just don't care about what's going on around you. That's pretty harsh. And we kind of debated whether we wanted to throw that word out there and use it as part of the presentation, because it is kind of harsh. But I think it kind of applies, and I'm not saying not every CFI out there, they don't care or they're not attentive enough, but what I've seen is kind of, there is kind of a little bit of apathy as far as apathetic about what they're supposed to do when they become CFIs. Another way to look at it is maybe this is the new hazardous attitude right there. We've got anti-authority and impulsivity and invulnerability and macho and resignation and all that. And I was talking about this with a colleague and he was like, maybe this is the new hazardous attitude that, you know, just okay is just fine. And do the very minimum you can to get by, to get the ratings, to get the hours, and then I'm gone. And do we really want that? So one could say that CFIs who are just looking to build time, and I'm going to throw this out there, are apathetic. We could say that, right? And the outcomes of a time-building CFI are certainly different than a CFI that's a professional CFI. So if you look at the impounds, inputs and outputs, time building outcome is time. And a professional CFI is a well-qualified skilled pilot. That's their outcome, right? So why are we forcing these CFIs to be teachers when they don't want to? We could ask, where does this apathy actually begin? There we go. So I put together kind of a cool list of where we as pilots can be apathetic, right? And us CFIs too, and I'm totally guilty of all this stuff. And I would ask you, where are you finding or where have you find that yourself or other students are apathetic about their due, their attention to their skills and whatnot, The one I really like here is the often talked about and rarely visited center line. Entering the traffic pattern on a straight and no communications in the traffic pattern, skipping the run-up in a hurried departure, things like that, lack of checklist uses, just skipping through it because I've done it a million times. Following the magenta line instead of kind of a situationally knowing where you are by through time and place. Certainly there's a huge reliance on technology and not a lot of understanding of the fundamentals of where things come from and why the things are the way they are. As soon as I pull out the E6B on a student in flight, they're like, ah! And yes, I will do that with a student on flight. I'll pull out the E6B and make them do time and distance and all that stuff all over again. And whatnot. So think about where are we not giving the attention that needs to be given, both within ourselves and for our students and whatnot. And these are just some examples, and I'm sure you've got other examples out there too. So what about our culture? And our kind of our current mindset. So as you look at this list here, we eat our own, and that coffee mug you're seeing there, CFI, let's see if I can survive another student, was actually given to me by a student of mine. But I have found through my training and whatnot, there is this kind of this mindset, this culture out there that, you know, we also say, hey, my student's trying to kill me, right? And I've certainly heard many times from other flight instructors and whatnot, well, a student would come and say, oh, I got a 90 on my written. Oh, well, you studied too hard. You put too much energy into that. I guess my point is, do we really want this kind of thinking out there? We should really be striving for excellence. And these are just examples of where I think we can put out in the ether the culture and be apathetic and kind of be complacent and kind of like, okay, you know, just do the minimum to get by. Like, just memorize the test questions. That's all you got to do. Go to a test prep, memorize the questions, and you'll pass the exam just fine. Don't worry about getting deeper into the material at all. Don't worry about opening the books and cracking the books and really diving in and studying. So, you know, how many times have you heard that, you know, take the FAR, if you read the FAR aim, you know, use it to put yourself to sleep. And I've certainly heard this from fellow CFIs. Oh, I'm just a CFI, right? That's all I am. I have a common saying that I'm just a monkey in the right seat, you know, and I'm just there in the right seat, but we're really more than that. So words matter and what we say matters. And do we really want this out there? So this is kind of in my mind, a snapshot of our culture and whatnot. Part of this too, I think, and being in a public school setting, I'm seeing this from that side, and I'm also seeing this from the flight instruction side, is what I like to call cliff note flight training. So how are current CFIs and how are pilots learning? And what I'm seeing is it's all YouTubes, videos, social media. and whatnot, is how people seem to be grabbing information. And I don't fault the student and whatnot for this, because it's so pervasive and so prevalent in our culture that this is how we get information. And there's such an amount of it out there. But I am noticing it's driving a short attention span. It's not getting deep into the material. And, you know, when was the last time a student actually picked up one of the books and read through it? When was the last time a student read through the Airplane Flying Handbook or the PHAC and read it cover to cover and really dove deep into the material, taking that deep dive into relevant material with a focus, as opposed to focusing on kind of quick and easy online videos that, you know, a lot of this stuff that's been put out there is poor quality and not really great in content. And I get a lot of students come to me and they just want to learn via videos. And I'll have to spend time and review those videos with them to see that they're looking at the good stuff that's actually good quality and good content, driving home the right information that we want. So with all the media out there, it's no wonder that, you know, we kind of have this driven to distraction kind of society going on. And I'm seeing at the planets in my school level, I'm seeing the kids come up, they have very little attention spans and whatnot, and their unwillingness kind of struggle with the material that's hard, the shortest attention spans, and as soon as something gets really challenging, they don't seem to know how to get and dive into the material and struggle with it and be okay with the struggle of learning something that is challenging. Take weather theory and aerodynamics and things like that.
Hey, Jason, with this topic right now, we had a great question come in that I think would be really good to discuss while we're on this slide.
Yep.
Joss Visser asks, which is worse, ignorance or apathy?
That's a great question. That is a really solid question, and I love it. I don't know which is worse, because ignorance, you're kind of blissfully unawares, right, of what's going on. And apathy, in my mind, is more like you know what you should do, but you're not doing it. Okay? If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Does that kind of answer the question? Yeah?
Yeah. I think we could say they're equally hazardous, right?
They're absolutely equally hazardous. And that's a really good one. I'll probably add ignorance to the presentation for the next time too. So thank you for that question. I love it. So the other thing too is I'm seeing there's a lack of consequences too. And I certainly see this in the school system, but I'm also seeing this in the flight training environment that, you know, if a student fails, fine. And if your student fails, your CFI, your student fails, does it matter? Does it affect your career path? You know, you get a couple, does it really matter? Is there consequences to your career, to your job, right? I don't know of many other jobs where if your output is not of satisfactory quality, where your student doesn't pass and you have repeated failures, where that's just okay, right? In my mind, it's not okay, and a red flag should go up. Even if there's one failure, if with my CFIs at where I work, if somebody has a failure, student, and they do happen, right? We can't control everything. But as soon as one of my CFIs, one of their students goes away and has a failure or discontinue or whatever, I want to sit with them. I will sit with them, meet with them, and talk about, let's learn what happened. Where do you think maybe you fell off? Where do you think the student fell off? Because those failures are actually opportunities for growth and learning. And they should be examined in detail and not something to be afraid of, but you should be thoughtful enough to look at that and learn from that. And I don't know that that's happening, and maybe it is, but I just wanted to call that out. So, you know, we have the CFIs, we've talked about it last time, their desire to get the ratings, to get the 1500 hours and whatnot, and leads to what you could kind of effectively call gaming the system, right? You know, you're kind of you're kind of manipulating the system to get what you want, right? You want to get the ratings, you want to get the 1500 hours that you want to get out so you can go do the next thing. And in my mind, this is kind of a self-centered view of what you're going to do, of being a CFI, of being an educator, right? It's kind of a me approach that I'm going to get what I want, and my goals are disregard kind of the bigger system, the bigger community of the aviation that we're all part of. Okay. And I think of the student in one way who, you know, first thing they do, they want to set up the GoPro cameras and whatnot. before the pre-flight because they want to look good. They want to capture it on social media. Is that the focus of the lesson, right? Have you guys had that? I've had that many times. I've heard stories of CFIs using students to build time in such a way that they will not follow the path of going to solo and then doing your cross country and then your prep. They will, whatever flight time they need, they will go out with the student to do it. So even if the student hasn't done their cross country yet, they're going out and doing cross countries because that CFI wants to build cross country time. They're actually taking money and manipulating and kind of stealing from these students to get what they want, cross-country time, nighttime, and not providing any educational content to the learner, to the student, and that is their job. I've also heard stories of airlines kind of bringing in check airmen to adjust their standards to cater to trainees who don't want to do X, Y, and Z. So it's kind of a dumbing down, if you will, or kind of working to the lowest common denominator and whatnot. So think about the PAVE checklist and the I Am Safe checklist too as well. It's a great little kind of matrix to kind of look to whether you're good, safe to fly, whether the weather and your condition works out and whatnot. But I've seen students kind of manipulate the numbers, the data, just so they can go fly, so they can get the time, right? And that's not really what the intent of that process is. You're not playing with the numbers just so you can see if you can do it. You're manipulating the numbers to see if you should do it, right? To make that go no go decision. So it's kind of, in essence, in my mind, you're kind of gaming the system. And if you're gaming the system, why even bother having a discussion about risk management in terms of hazardous attitudes and things like that? And so it's kind of like, okay, this is just busy work. What's the point of it, right? All right, how do I get there the fastest, cheapest way possible? So one end, maybe you could say we're kind of catering to the lowest common denominator here. So we have CFIs. So now you got CFIs that are teaching other CFIs and CFIs just wanting to build time without focusing squarely on their students and their own developments as pilots. And then you get kind of like what I call here, the blind leading the blind, right? And again, this is kind of harsh, and I don't mean to be harsh, but if we have poorly trained CFIs who don't know they're poorly trained and whatnot, then they teach other CFIs and the quality of flight instruction will continue to degrade and so on and so forth. And not to mention the poorly trained CFIs training GA pilots. And these pilots, even though they're not going to become professional pilots, they're still nonetheless going to be part of the aviation system. So... I had a conversation with a recent CFI graduate and just got their CFI, just starting to work in the industry. So I kind of canvassed them to see where they're at and asked some leading questions. And this is what I kind of got out of it. And it was kind of telling. And this was a CFI who somebody wants to be a professional CFI and they're not just looking to build time at all. All right. They were looking during their training for more structure. They were looking for more guidance. And when they were thrown into the job, what they told me says, I feel like I've been thrown out into the ocean and I don't have a life jacket. I've gotten all this training, but I really don't feel I know how to apply it and how to do it. And they actually said during training, they felt isolated. Okay. They talked about they're an older student. They talked about how a student age matters and that they were able, because they were older, able to kind of self-select and self-guide themselves to get to the material that they needed. But imagine somebody, a younger student, where they're going to need more guidance, more structure. Okay. They actually, believe it or not, I'm going to come to this momentarily, talked about wanting more simulator and ground time. Yes. Mm-hmm. Love students to come to me and ask me, Jason, can we do more ground time? Can I get in that simulator? Actually, I do have a few students that are like, I just want to do more simulator with you. I'm like, yes, I love you so much. And that's great. And they brought out the fact that the cockpit is a terrible classroom. And we kind of know this. And they're like, Jace, where's professional development for CFIs and whatnot? And so this is a new CFI, what they're experiencing, okay? And of course, I referred them to NAFI and whatnot to get resources and whatnot to help them out. And there you go. So an example of a current recent CFI. So where do we place the blame, right? I'm placing that. So bad dogs are bad owners, right? There are no bad dogs. They're just bad owners, right? So saying you're bad or apathetic, that CFIs are bad or apathetic, they're actually, we are a product of our environment, right? So is our environment creating and sustaining a supportive environment for our CFIs? Or are we incentivizing a group to really not care about what they're supposed to be doing, the teaching they're supposed to be doing? And if they're not here to teach, you know, are they really working in the reality of what being a CFI is? If they're not present with their students and they're connecting, are they really connecting to the goals of their students? So what should we be doing? So let's kind of take a step back. And I want to kind of look at the Aviation Instructor's Handbook, everybody's favorite reference, and kind of pull some stuff out of that. So let's look at human behavior. And this, in fact, is right here out of Chapter 2 of the Aviation Instructor's Handbook. And, you know, it talks about what learners can become apathetic when they recognize that the instructor has made inadequate preparations for the instruction being given, or when the instruction appears to be deficient, contradictory, or insincere. It's right there in front of us that this is something we need to address. It's something important and to pay attention to, right? So recall that as instructors too, we need to understand human behavior. So it tells us by observing human behavior, an instructor can, you know, gain the knowledge to need it to better understand their self as an instructor, yourself as an instructor, as well as the needs of the students. Okay.
We have an interesting point made that sort of makes sense here. This is from George, who's one of my fellow board members. He says, I've had a number of calls lately where prospective students act like training is merely an impediment to being a pilot.
I like that. I've had the same experience too. They just, like I said, they want to get through the training as fast as they can. And they're not fully engaged in that process. So human behavior, go back into Chapter 2, take a look at it. And this kind of outlines really good that if we understand how humans behave, how we behave, and how our student behaves, we can better be better effective CFIs. So what is our goal here? Our goal here is learning. Okay. And we have a variety of vehicles for learning. And recall that learning, and I'm going to read it, is the acquisition of knowledge of the understanding of a subject or skill through education, experience, practice, or study. Perhaps it's all of those that we need to do. So to be an effective instructor, recall that we need to seek and understand why people do what they do and how they learn, right? We used to have to use this knowledge of human behavior, their basic needs and whatnot, understand their defense mechanisms and whatnot, and how adults learn and in order to organize and conduct a productive learning activity. So we need to understand human behavior and how students learn. So that's a lot of responsibility. And in my mind, that makes us professionals in every sense of the word. So let's refresh what the FAA says about aviation instructor responsibilities. So aviation instructor responsibilities. So you're to help, your job at an instructor is to transfer knowledge, help learners meet and exceed established standards, right? Instructors measure learner performance against those standards and give positive enforcement along the way. And recall this learning process should be an enjoyable, fun experience. We should be making each lesson fun and engaging and adventure. So this kind of made me think of the difference between a teacher, an educator, and a coach. And I think CFIs kind of embody all those things. So teaching, we already know, if we define teaching, it's kind of imparting knowledge or new instructions to someone else, okay? And it's a profession. You think of what I do in my school as a teacher. So it's somebody who is in a school, and that's not necessarily true. A teacher is actually a subject expert who imparts knowledge and is an experienced professional. However, the line between a teacher and a coach is drawn in their relationship to their students. So teachers help students learn, and that's pretty much the end of it. The teaching part is focusing on just imparting knowledge and learning. And where the teacher actually, you know, you're in charge of the classroom, your ground experience, or whatever. And in one way, teaching has little to do with the student as an individual, okay? An educator, on the other hand, that's one that's skilled in teaching, not only teaching, but also the theory and the practice of education. And educators actively seek to adapt and improve their practice in line with their own research, and they're continually teaching, reflecting on how they provide material and how they're interacting with their students. So that makes an educator, okay? And then there's coaching. You can think of coaching where it's focused around the student. Coaching focuses on development and guidance of a student. And in a way, coaching helps students grow as individuals, all right? And looks at refining student skills and finding direction and whatnot, okay? So which are you, okay? As a CFI, are you more of one than another? Do you recognize each of those roles within your teaching? Okay. So let's get away from the AI for a moment, the Aviation Instructors Handbook, and look at us as teachers, educators, and coaches, and look at how we can kind of surprise ideas about there, how we can kind of do our jobs just a little bit better. So I don't know if anybody's heard this before. It's called Teach It to the Sixth Grader. And Richard Feynman, he was a physicist, a prominent American scientist, physicist. He was actually considered one of the great influential and theoretical physicists in the field of quantum mechanics and whatnot. He proposed this idea of teach it to a sixth grader, okay? And check out the matrix we got here. So this technique works whether you're a learner or a teacher. So Feynman opposed basically rote learning, and that's a lot of what we have in aviation. It's kind of an unthinking memorization and whatnot and of gathering material, but it doesn't really put it in context, okay? So what he liked to do is he said, the way you learn new material is if you can teach it to a sixth grader, you got it. And the technique is pretty simple. You pick a topic of study, right? And use simple language, sixth grade language, and you explain it. Learn how you understand it. And by identifying those gaps, you go back to the source material so you could better identify it. So as you go through your teaching practice and whatnot and being a CFI, I've seen a lot of CFIs work with students, do ground instruction, whatever, and they're kind of throwing out the terms they've heard and read. And hey, Aaron, have you lost my camera?
Yeah, stand by 1 second.
Yeah. Oh, there it comes.
There you are.
There we go. Sorry about that, everybody. Okay, where was I?
Live TV, the beauty of live TV.
I know, right? So I work with a lot of, I've seen a lot of CFIs, work with a lot of CFIs that they're giving instruction and they will use the terms that they've read about, but you can tell they don't really understand them. They really haven't gotten deep into the understanding of them. So it's kind of like you take the big, take a piece of a blank white piece of paper and you kind of write down everything you know about a subject and use clear, simple terms. And if you can do that, and if you can teach that way, then you're going to really understand it. My whole point is, as CFIs, we need to know material really in depth. And if you can teach it to a sixth grader, then you're going to remember, you're going to understand it, and you're going to be able to communicate that information very, very well. So again, pretend to teach it to a child, organize and simplify it, and keep coming back to it round and round you go. It's a time-consuming process, and it absolutely can be hard work, but you'll never forget the material that you learn, and you'll be a better teacher for it. And this is important because I'd be remiss in, calling out the law of primacy or the rule of primacy. And according to this principle, it's important for the instructor to make sure the student understand the correct sequence and be aware of the safety precautions for each procedure and maneuver and whatnot. So we've got to get it right the first time. Primacy in learning and teaching, what is learned first often creates the most strong and unshakable impression. Okay. And when the chip am I back?
You're back. Yeah, you're good.
Sorry about that, everybody. Anyways, where was I? So, law of primacy. So it's important we as CFIs get it first the right time. So let's take a look at something I like to call the learning cycle, the optimal learning cycle. The optimal learning cycle is kind of a way to put things together, and it's achieved through a framework that includes academics, simulation, and in-airplane training. So we all know that the classroom is an absolute terrible classroom. The cockpit is an absolute terrible classroom. So through this process of looking at the academic simulation and in-player training, we can incorporate lots of different elements into how we approach our material and whatnot with students. So we can integrate mental imagery, virtual reality, simulation training. We can practice deeply by chunking it and visualizing it, feeling it, and repeating it. All these elements support the common goal of learning something new. So credit for this slide actually goes to Rich Stoll, and I want to throw out some credit there. So we use all these techniques to kind of propel our students forward. And recall our level of learning. There are four practical levels of learning. We've got rote understanding, which we want to move from that memorization to understanding or comprehensive, right? Which puts a couple concepts together to explain something. And then we go from that to to application. And finally, to solve a problem, and correlation. And that's kind of the ultimate goal of everything we do, is the objective of aviation instruction, is that when we're able to associate all the elements that we've taught, all the segments, all the blocks of learning and whatnot, we put it together into one package. So that's the goal that we're actually trying to do. So how are we working through these levels? Are we aware when your student moves from one level to another? Are you aware where your knowledge lies within these levels? Let's come back and we'll look at the optimal learning cycle here. So we kind of look at this in three components here. And the first component is to learn or to think. So I ask you, how much time do you guys spend here? How much time do you spend on the ground instruction? Things like, do you have a syllabus to teach ground instruction? Do you have your own PowerPoints and lessons created? How much weight do you put into this area? Okay. A little context shows that the flight to ground ratio is 2-1. I've seen that data. But shouldn't it be flipped the other way? Shouldn't it be more like 1-2? I remember in college, for every hour of class time, I'd have 3 hours of ground prep time, right, for my college classes and whatnot. I think in the military, the ground to flight time is something on the order of 12 to 1 or 16 to 1. And yes, much of what it takes to become a good pilot actually happens on the ground both before and after the mission. So that includes a debrief as well, and we'll kind of get there. So I want you to think about how much ground time do you actually spend? And the ground time is anything that's academic or supports the knowledge. And it doesn't have to be things that are within aviation. It could be outside of aviation, anything that's related to what you're going to do. And that kind of brings me to the difference between an aviator and a pilot. Have you ever thought about that? And which do you want to be, right? Which are we, should we be creating? As a CFI, we're a teacher who happens to be a pilot, right? Not a pilot who happens to teach. And maybe you've heard the phrase, what you do on the ground makes you an aviator. What you do in the air makes you a pilot. And I think this is a really great quote. So how many aviators do we know? And how many pilots do we know? So when I think about an aviator versus pilot, I think about the bigger picture of a flight educator. And what I think about is, what's our philosophy of teaching? I have one for teaching astronomy. So do you have a philosophy teaching? Are we teaching our CFIs to have a philosophy for their teaching? So I would ask them, what is their goal? Have they written out their philosophy? It's almost like a mission statement of what they're supposed to do. So for new CFIs, this should be discussed and cultivated. And each CFI will have their own unique approach. They can get this down on paper. And by doing this, it helps set expectations for both you and the student. So clear expectations are set with our students at the very beginning of every flight. We have high or low expectations. And if we hold these high standards, a high philosophy of flight training, our students will too. Okay. Aaron and I were talking about an SOP for our flight schools, and you have one of these for your flight schools, right?
Yeah, I do. Just, you know, I'm a Part 61 flight school, but just I love giving new instructors structure. You know, they know what's expected of them, what outcomes we expect, what they can do, what they can't do. And it's like they crave it, you know. It's not like I'm being this heavy-handed boss. They thrive when they know what the expectations really are, and it seems like they feel like I have their back. It's to me, it's just mentorship.
Exactly. And that's clear with that, the one CFI that I interviewed, that they felt like they were just kind of thrown out there with no guidance and no framework as to how to do what they're supposed to do. And most jobs you go to, you have some sort of framework. You have some sort of standard operating procedures for the company that you're going to work for, right? So let's go back to the teaching of ground a little bit. I think it was Rod Machado who said that it's often one, I think, and I might have flipped this before, but it's 1 hour of ground per two of flight, right? And in my mind, that seems pretty low, right? It should be flipped, okay? And there's a lot of problems we have with teaching ground, and you probably know what they are. I mean, there's not a lot of incentivization to teach ground, right? I've heard stories that often the pay for teaching ground is a lot less for teaching, sitting in the right seat and just going around the pattern a bunch of times. So you're not really incentivized to teach ground and to be in the classroom. And yet that is where learning occurs. That's where a lot of the aha moments are. And that's setting the foundation, right? I've got students who don't want to spend time during the ground. They just know, I don't want to come in for ground. I'm going to do it via YouTube video and whatnot. How many of you have got that? Oh my God, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of students think they can do the ground on their own. But as CFIs, we're responsible for making sure our learners learn the material appropriately. So even if they're sitting at home and they want to go through the YouTube videos and whatnot, I'm like, no, you still got to come in and we still got to do ground and whatnot. And while we're doing ground, are you logging? Are we tracking the ground that we're given? Do we have a syllabus for the ground that you're going to get? I have very defined ground lessons that I do for every single student. And I log it in their logbook that we've covered X, Y, and Z. I'm very deliberate about it. In fact, I even have my own PowerPoint presentations for a lot of the ground subjects that I'll pull out, because I know a lot of students are most of us are visual learners, right?
Yeah, you mentioned YouTube a couple of times. There's a question that came in that I think is relevant to that. This is from John. I think you could address this both from the CFI standpoint and from what you're seeing on campus. What about the millennial factor? Highly tech-oriented, social network gurus, but seemingly scant knowledge in the physical sciences necessary to understand even basic technology.
So is there a question? I'm sorry. I don't know if I got that.
Well, I think in terms of setting that expectation, number one, that we try to steer the learning to a face-to-face environment instead of them going and trying to find their own on social media. And then maybe teaching these things to students that don't come in with the level of knowledge of the physical sciences that maybe our generation or the generation prior did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely seeing that in the school level and in the flight instructor level, that there is that lack of fundamental knowledge. And you said something about interaction, face-to-face interaction, right? Everything's by screen and YouTube and whatnot. And I've had DPs come to me and they say, like, it's a student doesn't want to make eye contact with me, right?
Right.
And I think that's the culture in which we're living. And I don't think it's a great thing at all that people are not willing to have eye-to-eye contact, because there's something about that face-to-face in-person contact where gets you present and fully engaged in what you're doing.
Right.
Is my video out again, Aaron?
We've been voice only on you for a few minutes, so let's see if we can get your camera on again. If not, we'll carry on.
Yeah, I got, how about that? Is that good? Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. So yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think the whole point of the ground component is, you know, how much are we driving students to spend time studying the material in depth? And are we mentoring them in a way, giving them the support they need to do the ground and not merely go to the YouTube videos and whatnot and social media and whatnot to get their material? Are we driving them to actually read the PHAC and the airplane flying handbook cover to cover and diving into this material? Any more questions on that area or comments?
One more that I think fits really well here. I think this is a great question from Sydney. Sydney, thank you so much for bringing this up, because this is something that I ran into as well. Speaking of ground and structure, what do you suggest for Part 141 CFIs who are limited in the number of ground lessons by a TCO?
Who are limiting it?
Well, limited. You know, a training course outline via Part 141 spells out exactly what we can and can't do. So
I in my mind, just because you're only supposed to do X, Y, and Z, you don't have to, you do the X, Y, and Z, but you move outside that. So, you know, I've always been a pretty aggressive lifelong learner, and I will continue to be. So I always, and I drive my students to do this, grab material outside it, okay? Find the areas that you're struggling with and go work on them. If you're just, you know, it's kind of a mindset thing. If you're only learning what's been outlined, right, then okay. But in my mind, that's really, you know, the syllabus there is just kind of the framework. There's so much more material you can go outside and learn about and discover. There's a plenty of books and whatnot. Does that make sense, right?
Yes, it does. I want to jump in real quick too, and just let folks know that we'll probably run over maybe by about 10, 15 minutes, because, you know, we're getting so many good questions in here. So we're going to keep on moving, but just to be respectful of everybody's time, I want to make sure people know that we probably won't be able to cut it short right at 1 hour here.
So I'll push it forward a little bit, actually, and I'll be a little less, I'll be more quick. How's that? So let's look at this optimal learning cycle, and let's go to the next. So the play component or the do component, okay, of this cycle. So you've done the acquisition of knowledge on the ground and whatnot, okay? And now this can be on the ground, or this can be in a simulator. This is kind of the do part. And I got an image there. This is actually one of my students here, and I'm teaching them how to enter a hold. and I'm doing it on the ground. Nice kinesthetic activity. It's got a visual component to it. And I'm teaching them how to enter a ground, and you can see there's actually a chicken there on the ground that I'm using. It's a thing. And then I've got a line, and that's his fix that he's going to enter. And I'm using kinesthetic technique to try to have him figure out how to enter hold before we ever get into an airplane and even before we get into a simulator. Okay. And this can be the play part of it. Okay. And it can be anything that has to do with how people learn, whether visually or kinesthetic or through auditory, whatnot. And we can go into how people learn in those ways. But this is just an example of what you can do. What do you guys do? What are best practices that you have in this area outside the cockpit to help your students learn and grab knowledge and make it fun and engaging like this, right? You could use live ATC. You can walk around holding patterns. You see aerobatic pilots that are out there and they're doing it too. And it really takes this concept from I used to play guitar, musicians and horseback riders and athletes and whatnot. They visualize their performance. They visualize what they're going to do too. We can do this with our pilots as well. And I always tell my students to go out and visualize the flight. Visualize the beginning, the middle, the end. Visualize all the maneuvers, staying within tolerances and whatnot. Visualize your feet moving against the rudders. Yes, we use our rudders. You know, visualize moving the yoke and all that stuff. And we're going to skip along. Those flight simulators. How many of you guys use flight simulators? And they're perfect for reinforcing muscle memory and not, and you know, versus just kind of the and whatnot. And they're cognitive tools, right? They force critical thinking skills over just muscle memory of being in the cockpit, right? And we know they're great for scenario-based teaching, but how many of us actually use flight simulators in engaging kind of scripted, kind of deliberate way? You can get live ATC in there. It forces you to design an effective learning program, to develop cognitive exercises with your students, right? So, and the problem is we need students, CFIs, to value flight simulators. And we need to encourage and support and use them. I mean, I know the challenge is flight CFIs can't log PIC time in that, right? But we just said a CFI is an educator first and a pilot second. So in my mind, CFI should be all over what they can do in a flight simulator to design a rich and engaging educational program. And why would a CFI not be into this? When you get to the airlines, you're going to get checked out in a simulator, right? So wouldn't it be cool to understand how to work with these things? The third part of the cycle is the fly. And that's kind of obvious. You get in the airplane and, you know, takeaways, plan the flight, fly the plan. What you do on the ground should complement what you do in the air, okay? Each ground lesson should match the flight lesson. It should be a one-to-one correlation, and there shouldn't be any surprises. And if there are surprises, which it's aviation, there always are, make them into teachable moments, right? And build awareness in your flight so they can kind of self-diagnose, right? So I kind of look at the right seat, sitting in the right seat, being that monkey in the right seat, as a laboratory. What a great way to approach it. Each flight for me is an adventure, okay? So the student in the left seat is looking for us for guidance, moral support, knowledge, a transfer of aeronautical decision-makings, all that stuff. So you can be the captain in the right seat. You can be the captain in the right seat that you want of your captain when you get to your favorite airline, that captain that you want to bid the flight with in the left seat, who's going to then teach you the knowledge you want. Well, you get to do that in reverse. So you should be thinking about that, because flight training is about, it's a giving back. You know, it's not about taking. So each flight for me is an adventure. I make each set one up as an adventure. We're going to, and whatnot. Okay. And I got a little image of here. This was introduced to me when I was just in my CFI. It's called The Patter for Elementary Flight Instructors. Actually, a book put out in the 30s or so. I think it was the 30s, right? I don't know if, Aaron, you're familiar with it. It actually scripts out exactly what to say for each maneuver on each flight. And I love it. But think about your patter. It's called the CFI patter. What you say, how you say it. Like, in effect, you're a performer. You're an actor when you're in a cockpit. And, you know, if you deliver a convincing performance, you're going to engage the student that much better in what they're going to learn, right? So the CFI patter. Maybe you've heard about Gladwell's in his book Outliers. It takes 10,000 hours of intensive practice to achieve mastery of complex skills and materials, right? Like musical instruments, programming, martial arts, and whatnot. Well, a deeper dive here says it takes deliberate practice, okay? And deliberate practice with a skilled, good teacher. So good teaching matters. So you could practice and you can go around the pattern a million times and whatnot. But, you know, if you learn to do something the wrong way and you keep reinforcing that, you can do that for 10 hours, but you're not going to be skilled at it. So good teaching plus deliberate practice with a good mentor, that's your path towards mastery. Okay. And in fact, the Canadian system, they kind of set it up, if you ever looked at it, they kind of set it up in a really kind of cool way. They have four classes of flight instructors, class four up to class one. And with each you've got flight teaching and written requirements. You've got to get letter recommendations for each level. There's certain privileges for each classes. So each class doesn't have the same privileges. And once passed, there are supervision requirements. Like class four, you have supervision requirements that you have to maintain. So you're getting mentorship, right? So this is idea towards what are we doing to become masters at our craft? As teachers in my school system, they have to do 30 plus hours of continuing education training every year. They're required to do it. What are we doing to improve our skill set, our mastery to become better CFIs? Okay. Ooh, I think I just skipped one there. Sorry about that, everybody. So this kind of gets the idea that, you know, what we do in my mind is very cyclical, right? It's we're a student today and tomorrow we're a teacher. And next thing you know, we're a student again, right? This kind of gets to the mind that good pilots are always learning. But being in a teaching profession, being a CFI, a teaching profession, we need to keep up to date with how we learn, how students learn, educational development, what research is kind of happening so that we can apply this best practice that we can apply in the ground or on an airplane, right? It's kind of like looking back, you look back to your first student to now, how have you improved as a CFI, right? How have you changed as a CFI? Are you better or worse, right? What have your students taught you that have made you better person, better instructor? So the relationship you have with your students is symbiotic. Right. And if we look at our students and our flights as problems for us to solve, we kind of become problem solvers. And Aaron and I, we have talked about this at great length about how being a CFI is more or less a problem solver. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a great quote by an American cinematographer. It says that you're always a student, never the master. You have to keep moving forward. And I think that's what we as CFIs actually really are. So we've talked about these kind of three levels, this kind of cycles, this learn, do, fly component. And I think if we could take it all and we wrap it into the debrief. So I call it debrief to win. Okay. And actually there's a book out there entitled Debrief to Win. Okay. And in the foreword, it says a debrief is not a gruesome sport or a place to place blame or shame. Quite the opposite. In fact, the debrief is where we celebrate our victories as well as we learn from our failures. Okay, so a debrief that's properly one is affirming positive experience. And what we're saying is how many of us actually debrief with our students to in-depth? How many of us plan to do a thorough debrief? So if you think of debrief encapsulating the learn, do, fly, and bring us back into that, the debrief is where we have our aha moments. Okay, but I'll find, and I'm even guilty of this too, coming back with a student that, okay, I got to go, my next student, bye. Are you setting up the next lesson? Are you giving them material afterwards to go drive their learning forward? Are you giving them takeaway? Homework assignments. I'm always now trying to get my student homework assignments because I'm in charge of their learning and I'm going to drive what's going on today and tomorrow. Okay. And the military does, like I said, it's like 12 to 1, 16 to 1 as far as their debrief. They spend more time on the ground planning their flight and debriefing their flight than they do actually flying the flight. And they actually break it down into chunks. They'll look at the safety of the flight. They'll look at the weather and whatnot. And I kind of broke it down. Well, let's look at the safety of your flight. What was the weather? How were the maneuvers? What aircraft systems maybe didn't work? How were your ATC communications when you flew? How was your communication between you and the student? How well did that go? You could even have your student do a written debrief of what happened. And that's a great way to encapsulate them, to force them to kind of really look at what they did and review what they do. And then again, prep for that next lesson. One thing that's going to be coming up, well, we're going to try to take this whole concept together and put it together, is something that's going to be happening up at Oshkosh in at least in April, and we're going to run an advanced IFR clinic, and we're actually going to try to put all this stuff together in practice, this kind of the optimal learning cycle where we're going to provide intensive IFR experience for people who sign up, where they're going to get deliberate ground instruction ahead of time through multimedia and whatnot, working with CFIs. They're going to come in and get really intensive IFR experiences and debriefing with instructors and whatnot, and we're going to kind of take that learning cycle and put it all together. So one question we get to, and I talked to a good friend of mine, he's a first officer with a major airline. And I was telling him about this presentation and what we wanted to talk about, and this is a massive subject for sure. And this was kind of his response to it. And because, you know, a lot of CFIs will say, well, where am I ever going to see what I do as a flight instructor? And I asked him that, and this was his response. You know, and he looked at it from, as a CFI, you're a manager, you're a designer of a learning experience, and you're looking at all these things from safety to weather to aviation, aircraft systems, to the learning outcomes of your students, to communication, to dealing with situations when things don't always go well, because we know in aviation, things don't always go well, right? We talked about that, you know, these are, so what he said is these are the skill sets we learn as CFIs, we develop as CFIs, are transient and they're directly applicable to being in the cockpit of a larger airplane. And in his mind, he said, there's no shortcuts. You got to be a CFI to become a skilled airline pilot, professional pilot. He did mention that he's concerned because he's seeing some of the same things that, that there's the next generation of accidents could possibly be the result of our current training environment. That's just his opinion. Maybe, maybe not. Let's hope not, right? So what we've kind of set up here is picking on Austin's model here that was to kind of describe what goes into making sausage, right? When it comes to learning college experience. And Aaron, you can speak more in depth about this if you want, right? So here's kind of the, if we look at this model of what we have this environment in which we have students coming in with their perceptions, their attitudes, how they learn, their career desires. And then we're putting them in to their environment, which is they want to build time. There's not a lot of CFI support. We have minimum standards, the ACES standards, which are good standards, but in my mind, they should be above that. And kind of the things, also, we have reliable aircraft. We're going to ignore the cost of training and all that. We're not going to talk about that. That's kind of the environment they're working in. And what is the outcome? Well, we've got these high failure rates. We've got CFIs that are and pilots that are being poorly trained. Maybe we have a little bit more of an unsafe aviation system. And we certainly have, in my mind, low community engagement. So what we can do is if we add kind of a feedback loop to this, we can engage with mentorship, right? We can provide a positive environment and kind of change how we approach what we do, okay? And we can create aviators. And if we look at accountability, and if we do that, then the theory is, and the outcome is that we're going to have lower failure rates, well-trained CFIs pilot, a safer aviation system. So with all that I've kind of presented, what is a CFI? And in my mind, this is a CFI. Kind of a jack of all trades, which I think is a great job and a great career, because you never get stale. You never get bored. Can we communicate this to the up and coming CFIs that are coming on board? As you get to do a lot of different things, you are a true jack of all trades. You're an educator, you're a teacher, you're a coach. You're in the cockpit, you're a performer, you're an actor, right? I've got students who I mentor. Learning to fly is challenging. For some, it's scary. We know that. So you're a mentor. I'm a student every day. I learn something new every day from my students and from my fellow CFIs. We get to solve problems and trying to figure out how our students learn, how to get them over their learning plateaus, how to get them where they want to go. of course, you know, we're role model, and sometimes we end up being therapists too when things don't go well, or, you know, we've all been there too. So being a CFI is a lot more in my mind than just kind of that kind of dry explanation that I get, or definition that I gave you in the beginning. And what I presented here in is really nothing new. This is out of a manual of flight training that was written back in 1936. And go ahead and give it a read. And it really kind of outlines that this, you know, it says that you're more than just a pilot. You're an educator, you're a teacher, and you need to be skilled in the instruction, the techniques of teaching and education. So big takeaway, or one takeaway anyways, a little perspective, if you will. I suffer from working in a planetarium. So I tell people I spend my life virtually in the stars, or so I'm virtually off the planet in the stars, or I'm really off the planet in an airplane. And that's given me a perspective that is something like this. So think about this. I got three images up there. That first image is Daedalus, or the fall of Icarus, right? And that was put together, I think, in 8 AD or something like that, a couple thousand years ago. So the idea is we've been dreaming about flying for that long, and probably longer, right? And then 1903 comes around and we're doing it, right? And that was only 120 years ago. And now that's that image there is an iconic image from Apollo 12, looking back on the Earth, our blue dot image, right? And look how far we've come in an amazingly short amount of time, from dreaming about flight 2,000 years ago with these mythical tales to actually doing it, and now we're off in space. So in my mind, being a CFI is kind of a culmination of this dream, this desire to do what we're doing, and we get to do it fairly easy and regularly. We're actually a part of history. And when I look at it that way, it kind of looks at that. We need to respect this, and as CFIs, we're part of this culmination of history, right? So why do we want to be boring about it? Why do we want to kind of not treat it for what it is and look at it as this amazing skill set and craft that we've been able to do to bring students along to be part of this legacy of flight that we're all part of? It's just my little take on it, right? So a few takeaways here for us. If I could put it all down, is we want to have a growth mindset for both the instructor and the learner. And I'm always trying to improve my skills, whether it's teaching skills, piloting skills, my knowledge of instrument approaches, approach plates, things like that, and refreshing my knowledge and how I teach that and how I engage with a student. And I'm always kind of changing how I teach things, right? More and more, I'm increasing my standards and what I'll accept and what I won't accept, right? We want to pay it forward. We're part of a big community and we want to help each other do that, understand better. We want to teach better and, of course, fly better. And remember, we're CFIs. In my mind, we're CFI is a teacher first that just happens to be a pilot, right? So there you go. Thank you very much. Kind of next steps is, what are the next steps? What other thoughts do people have? What other ideas? This is just meant to be a conversation starter, to get people thinking and having the dialogue, or about how do we make our profession more professional, more engaging, and kind of address what's going on with the cadre of CFIs that are coming up today.
It sounds like that's one huge takeaway for our audience, right? Is now it's our job to set these expectations with the new CFIs we're mentoring, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.